South Dakota's primary is 1 week away, and in the Republican gubernatorial primary, incumbent Dennis Dugard faces a challenge from former state legislator Laura Hubbell. Governor Dugard says that while he led the state through some dark days with the Missouri River flood and a $127 million structural deficit, he's found success in promoting economic development, increasing government transparency, and leading on issues of education and health care. Governor Dugard spoke with SDPB's Keely Bultina and made his case for a second four-year term.
Governor Dugard, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us today. You've been through this before. Why run for governor of South Dakota? Is it worth all of the work and the chaos and the challenges that you face as governor of South Dakota?
Well, I think since I've been elected, we've made good progress in managing the state budget and state finances. I think we've made good progress in economic development. We've recovered all the jobs we lost during the recession and added still more. We have implemented bipartisan criminal justice reform, a pretty broad and comprehensive criminal justice reform. We focused on the workforce issues that employers have been facing, and just recently this year reinvigorated that effort. And of course, all along the way, we've made investments in education, not just at the higher education level at the universities and technical schools, but also in career tech ed at the high school level. And yet, I think there's still a lot more to do. And so I'm hopeful the citizens will feel that I've done what I said I would do and give me a renewed chance at the job.
Where do you see those goals going in a second term in office? You've laid the groundwork. You've talked about some things like economic development and job creation. Where will that take you in a second term?
Well, in the areas of economic development, the Building South Dakota bipartisan legislation that I signed a year ago now, just really hasn't even had a full year of implementation. Some of that is in infrastructure help to local communities as they try to attract new businesses or try to help existing businesses expand. Also, there's help to local economic development offices. Also, one of the tools that we did not have before, but now have through that, is a forgiveness of some of the sales tax that businesses would pay when they construct a new facility or add new equipment. And all those tools are just available this past year. And so I think there's lots of opportunity to both recruit new businesses to South Dakota and also to help businesses that are here expand. So I want to continue to do some of the things I've been doing, meeting with existing businesses, asking how the state can help them succeed. But I think there's other areas where we can do more now. So I think there's an opportunity to recruit more banks to South Dakota. I'd like to bring more places like Citibank and Wells Fargo to have their home charters in South Dakota, or their main office, I should say. And I think there's some possibilities out there. And folks from Wells and Citibank have agreed to help me recruit their peers in that way. So that's something I'd like to do. Also, I think there's great opportunity for agriculture. In the last 10 years, the prices that have been available for commodities are so much better than they were for decades before that. And so agriculture has become a strong business, much stronger than it had been. And we have lots of opportunity in South Dakota, especially for dairy, for example. I've been to the World Ag Expo in the last 3 years trying to recruit dairies, and we're starting to see that. We've got dairies that are being established in Union County, in Grant County, in Lincoln County, up in Bruce, South Dakota. More and more people are seeing dairy as a great industry or a great agribusiness for South Dakota. And I'd like to help encourage that because I think there's lots of opportunity. We used to have over 200,000 cows in South Dakota, and now we have only about half that. So I think there's real opportunity to regain that strength. And we have lots of cheese processors here who want those cows too. So I'd like to help them bring them here.
Tell me about the balance between encouraging businesses to come here, trying to help businesses that are here locally, and then also bringing the public in on that, letting them know how things are going or what strategies you use.
Well, I think it's really important to maintain the confidentiality that businesses expect us to maintain during the negotiation process. Some of those businesses don't want other locations to know, their other states where they're doing business to know they're looking at making a move. And so they're wanting us to keep that confidential. They don't want their competitors to know. But once the decision has made, then I think it's important to be transparent about it. And we've begun, you know, to publish on the state's website all the economic development awards and the names of the communities, or excuse me, the names of the companies to whom those awards are made and the nature of those awards. And so I think it's important that we continue to do that. I think we want to be transparent in many ways, not just in economic development, but in as many ways as we can. So that's why we've got a new rules website. I think it was difficult. I remember when I was working at Children's Home Society, trying to find the rules that the state had that governed our agency in, you know, how we managed kids in our care who were victims of abuse and neglect. It wasn't easy to find those rules. You had to know where to look. And it shouldn't be that hard to find out the laws and regulations that govern a business. So I think the new rules website make it much easier to find out when rules impact you, and especially importantly, find out if new rules are being proposed that may impact you, or changes to the existing rules are being considered that may impact you. And so now, if you want to know those sorts of things, you can just sign up for an automatic notification, and you can comment right on the website. You don't have to worry about sending paper through the mail. You can do things efficiently the way we should do them in today's world. So the rules website, I think, is a good improvement. We've opened up the governor's hunt list, the roundup list of people who stay at Valhalla. As I mentioned, the GOED award, the economic development awards. But I think there's more we can do there too. In the areas of boards and commissions, we have over 100 boards and commissions. There's boards that regulate game, fish, and parks, that regulate our Board of Regents, regulate our higher education institutions. We have commissions for every profession that operates in South Dakota, from nurses to medical doctors to chiropractors to realtors to plumbers to electricians. And all those boards and commissions have different websites, and some make their minutes easy to find. Some, it's almost impossible to find them. And I've just become more aware of that recently, and I'm determined that we need to make it a lot easier for the public to find those kinds of things too. So one of the things we're working on this summer is a website that will make more uniform the availability of those kinds of things. And if we need to change some laws to require some of these boards and commissions who might otherwise be less open than they should be, then we'll have those laws proposed in the next session.
That brings up another point, and that's the governor's relationship with lawmakers. Tell me how you see the governor's office and how it really works most efficiently with the legislative branch while maintaining that separation of the different branches.
Well, I think it's the governor's responsibility to lead. Where there are issues that are important to a state, it's very important that the governor be the person that proposes specific, identifiable proposals to begin the discussion. You can ask my staff, and they will all tell you they've heard me say ad nauseum, every good discussion begins with a specific proposal. I think many bodies flounder as they deal with or grapple with an issue because no one comes forward with anything specific. Everyone wants to wait and see what others think. Everyone wants to offer opinions but not be too specific. And that's good politics in some ways because no one gets offended if you don't offer anything direct and specific. But that also makes advancement very difficult. And so I think it's up to the governor, important for the governor, to come forward with very specific proposals to advance an argument. Now, that doesn't mean others won't do that. Others will see those opportunities and come forward with specific proposals. Every legislator does that every session. But in a vacuum, the governor has to enter the vacuum and offer the specific ideas for policy change. And I'm happy to do that. Also, I think that sort of specific proposal is best when it's well informed by conversation with especially the legislature, stakeholders as well, as we did say, for example, in the criminal justice reform that involved a lot of interaction with prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, sheriffs, police, all the stakeholders that are involved in criminal justice offered ideas for improvement. But then it was really up to the governor to interact with the legislature and come forward with a specific proposal. And that's the way I have tried to operate. And especially as I've learned the job better, I've come to realize that's the process that works the best and results in the most beneficial product.
You mentioned the criminal justice reform. Another area that we've seen several specific identifiable proposals from the governor's office is education in South Dakota. And there have been quite a few different ideas that have come forward in your time in office. Back in 2012, there was House Bill 1234. And more recently, we're talking more about additions to accepting Common Core standards. So I'd like to give you the opportunity to talk a little more about education in South Dakota as it's changed under your watch or as where you see it's going.
Right. Well, first, I think it was good that you brought that up. House Bill 1234 is probably an example of policymaking that probably wasn't as well considered as the criminal justice reform. Not that the proposal wasn't a good one, because I still believe it was, but the process for developing that proposal, probably the better template was the template that was followed in the criminal justice initiative process, where we engaged a lot of stakeholders, worked through a lot of information exchange, studied the facts, studied best practices that were utilized in other jurisdictions, those areas where evidence proved a process or an approach had worth and brought results, and then considered what South Dakota should do, given all those facts and given that evidence and given those approaches that were successful in other jurisdictions. I did not employ that approach in education policy development and probably should have. But I think in the education arena, it's important to always remember that student achievement is our goal, not other things. Student achievement is, in the end, what we're after. And I know there are some who say Common Core is not a good standard set of standards that South Dakota should continue to follow. I disagree with them. I certainly understand the concern that people have that they believe it's a federal intrusion into a state's education policy arena. And I believe we should resist federal intrusion. into the state education arena. I believe that student privacy should be maintained. The local control of schools should be maintained. And of course, this year I signed some bills that protect student privacy and increase requirements for public input into new standards. And I don't support federally mandated content standards. But Common Core is not that. Common Core is a set of rigorous standards that raises the bar for student achievement. And we need to have rigorous standards in English and math that teach our students how to think independently and to solve real-world problems. And that's the goal of the Common Core standards, and I support those goals. And I think, and I know, teachers and administrators in South Dakota overwhelmingly support those standards as well. So I think when people understand what Common Core is and what Common Core is not, and the misinformation that is floating around in the internet, then I think most observers who are informed come to support Common Core in the end.
You did mention resisting federal intrusion, which leads pretty easily into a quick discussion about healthcare reform. You've talked in the past about different elements of the Affordable Care Act, what South Dakota must participate in, what South Dakota can choose not to participate in. Just give us an update about your stance on different elements of the Affordable Care Act and how you see that impacting South Dakota's health systems.
Well, in the early years of my administration, South Dakota had to make a decision about whether we were going to try to implement a state-based exchange. Because the Affordable Care Act, whether I agree or disagree with it, it is the law of the land. It's been passed by Congress and signed by the president, and it is law. And so, and the Supreme Court has upheld the vast majority of it. So we need to recognize that however much I may disagree with it, it is the law. And in implementation of that law, we had to make a decision. Was South Dakota going to establish a federal exchange, or were we going to rely upon the federal exchange? And we received some federal grant money to help us judge that. And we hired some consultants and did a lot of studying ourselves with our own employees, and we came to the conclusion that it did not make financial sense for us to establish a state-based exchange. It would just be simply too expensive, because even though there are South Dakotans who would gain insurance under the Affordable Care Act, the vast majority of South Dakotans already had health insurance. It was a small fraction of the population that did not have health insurance. And that small fraction would bear the cost of the exchange. And there just weren't enough people to spread that cost over for two reasons. One, the cost that it would have imposed on our citizens. And two, because of the complexity that's proven to have been seen by other states, I think we made the right decision when we did not implement a state-based exchange. Then, of course, we saw how the federal exchange itself had lots of problems in implementation. And they are getting better. That exchange is improving, but it was a train wreck for many months. And even in the last few months, we were still getting paper files from the federal government when we should have been getting electronic files. We are getting files of citizens in West Virginia when we should have been getting files of people from South Dakota. It was just a mess. But it is getting better, and it does represent an opportunity for some state citizens to obtain subsidized coverage. And that brings me to the other point that I've been making along the way, and that is, the expansion of Medicaid to citizens of 138% of poverty and below is an expansion that goes beyond what I think is necessary, given the fact that citizens who are at 100 to 138% of poverty can get subsidized coverage today by using the federal exchange. So on one hand, citizens are encouraged to be somewhat self-reliant by going on to the exchange, and getting subsidized coverage. And on the other hand, the federal government's encouraging us to discourage self-reliance by expanding Medicaid to cover those same people. And it's just a conflict in the way the law was implemented and written. And the federal government has been unwilling to acknowledge that they've got two conflicting provisions. And they've been unwilling to allow South Dakota to expand to include only those citizens at 100% of poverty and below. At this stage, I think we should continue a wait-and-see approach. We should encourage those who are between 100 and 138% of the poverty level to insure themselves through subsidized coverage on the exchange. We should encourage those people to recognize that some of the subsidies are very generous and the cost to the consumer is very low. And for those who are below 100% of poverty, we should encourage those adults who are able to do so to get above 100% of poverty so they can also qualify for subsidized coverage.
Governor Dennis Dugard, running on the ballot for the Republican nomination for governor of South Dakota. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Keeley.
That's Governor Dennis Dugard, and he spoke with STPB's Keeley Boltina. Governor Dugard faces former state lawmaker Laura Hubbell in next week's Republican gubernatorial primary. In the race for the Democratic nomination for governor, State Representative Susan Wismer faces former wildfire chief Joe Lowe. And there will be a debate between Lowe and Wismer Thursday evening on SDPB-TV that begins at 8 Central, 7 Mountain. We'll also air that debate on Monday's Dakota Midday. You can hear interviews with all of the primary candidates at SDPB.org, the governor candidates as well as the Senate candidates. And Mike Myers is running as an independent for governor, and we will speak with him on a future Dakota Midday.